he's right here, so. Oh, he talked it. He cold topped it.
Okay. Gotta go. Yeah.
Eight iron.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Welcome to the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined by Mark and Kevin, or Kevin and Mark, preferably Kevin and Mark, because obviously I am the alpha male in the group. Self-proclaimed.
Maybe on the golf course, you've had a couple of wins, but I reckon it stops there.
No, Mark and Kevin sounds better anyway.
Yeah, it does. Some big news to drop, haven't we?
We have. Are you giving it to them now?
Yeah, let's give it to them now, eh?
Go on.
So the Bogey Boys are proud to announce an affiliation, our first partnership with Arcos Golf.
It's big news. It's I've only had a look at the stuff we've been sent there, and it looks seriously high tech, doesn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, if you're a golfer who's wanting to get the handicap down like we are, and you want to start taking golf seriously, then what better way than having this caddy?
If that starts telling me I'm at a 7-iron, 150 and all that, though, it's going to go off. Because I know a couple of 20 yards short, but I fully believe my 7-iron's going 170 on.
Oh, my. So it's
reality hits home sometimes with distances, doesn't it, when you realise I don't hit it as far as I think.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It will tell you exactly where you are on the golf course, and it'll tell you what club they think that you should hit.
That's sick, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. But we don't know too much about it, do we, Kev? We've just
not really, no.
But we're going to be using it, and we're going to be using it as our statistics. It gives you stroke gained for putting.
It's very, very high tech.
I'm
just saying this because it's obviously it's on my worktop counter. But if I heard about this, I'd probably go out and buy it.
Yeah. We've also got an exclusive discount code for all our listeners as well. So at checkout, if you type in Bogey Boys 10, you'll get 10% off any of your orders.
We're going up in the world, aren't we?
Episode by episode, yeah. We're getting
brick,
there.
Brick by brick. Yeah.
But no, the idea is for us to work on it. We're going to work hard on our game this winter, aren't we, Kev?
I am literally, honestly, I've never been more focused. Like, I even went to the range today, and David was telling me a couple of weeks ago, you need to change your grip because it's a bit strong. And I just took it upon myself to move my grip to the left. And you know what a grip change does.
It
fucks you up. So, and I've done it, and I hit 70 balls, and it felt natural by the end of it. So it's not that much work you have to put in, but you just have to be going the range, you know what I mean, over this winter.
Well, one thing that's always stuck with me is the saying, feel is not real. So yeah. When you make a change, it will not feel right. So if you're making a change and it feels natural to you, then you're not making that change. It needs to feel awkward. You need to stick with it, believe it.
Like, I want to be next season as good as I can be. I want to put the work in cold, like as long as it can be cold or whatever, just smash it this winter.
Well, the benefits we've got with this is we're going to be able to understand our strokes gained for our putting, our driving, and it's going to give us the statistics of where we need to improve so that when we are wanting to speak to David and get those improvements through the coaching, we can show him the statistics and we can be like, look, this is where I'm struggling. Let's go and work on this. So there's a purpose.
I need to focus on me putting. I need to focus on me chipping. Every time I've got over 150, I'm making bogeys every time. It's like you can pinpoint what you need to work on, can't you?
And this is exactly when we spoke to Sean Townsend, when we talked about practice, what goes into becoming a professional. He said at the beginning of his career, he was just ball, balls, balls. There was no purpose to it. But now there's a more of a deliberate practicing that he does. So he works on aspects of his game. So he doesn't work for as long. So he works smarter, not harder. And I think with this, we're going to obviously see those benefits and we're going to be able to do that.
You can be blissfully unaware and just go around the golf course, chopping it around and think you're improving because you have one good round. But it's not about how good your good shots are, because everyone can make a birdie. Everyone can stiff it. It's how good your bad shots are, and reining in bad shots in to make your bad shots just miss the green. Or, do you know what I mean? You can miss them in right areas and all that. That's how you become better.
We're talking about birdies and bogeys and good shots and bad shots. We had a few of them yesterday, didn't we, when we had the game? 12 birdies we had between the three of us. So Kevin and I played with PJ professional David Goscombe, just round the sample names.
I love the way we call him that every time.
Well, do you know when we see a couple of the, when we see the lads at the golf club, they go, "How's PJ professional David Goscombe?"
That's sick, that.
I think we've introduced them enough now. Just David will do, won't it?
Yeah.
So Kev, David and I, we all played Southport and Ainsdale. Stapleford match. Kev off his six, me off me five, and
David's
off scratch. Yeah, so we had a Stapleford game, and between us, we had 12 birdies, didn't we?
Should have been 13 if I'd just kept my mouth shut when you didn't see me chunk that one in the rough.
So Kev jumped on the birdie train, birdied 14 and 15, and then we played the par 5 16th, which was playing a lot shorter, so it was an easy birdie opportunity. It didn't stop me from making a six, but birdie opportunity for your average. And you were on top of the Gumbelies Hill, weren't you? And topped it, and I didn't see it. And then you played your next shot.
And then got up and down from like 120 odd yards. And then you were like, that's three in a row. I was like, well, you didn't see me fluff one back there, did you?
Very honest of you.
All part of the integral part of the game, that being honest.
No, but it was a great game, wasn't it?
It was unbelievable. It was good fun.
But you know, for me, my golf improved a lot just by having a professional play with you.
No, it does, because he's solid, and he just doesn't miss fairways. He pots it up there, and he takes his time as well, don't he? Me and you just stand up there. He thinks a lot about his shots, and it shows in his score.
Yeah, definitely shows in his score. So, but for the front nine, I had three birdies, and I was only two over gross. That's the best front nine. 39 broke 40 for the first time in God knows how long. We don't really need to speak about the back nine as much, but the front nine was fantastic. No birdies back nine for me, just plenty of bogeys and tops. And
you turn around to me on the walking up the ninth and go, you've had no birdie. No, you've only had one birdie today. You need to catch up. And you went, I'm winning. And I was like, why have you just said that? You're obviously going to lose now. I birdied the ninth, had a couple of birdies back nine, got myself on par with us.
So you ended up
getting up and down on the last night to tie David.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff.
What was nice as well, just to embrace the elements a bit, because you can easily see the weather and think, you know, I'm not going out there, but getting out there in the rain, it's...
Yeah, we got soaked, didn't
we? We've got a few American listeners as well, haven't we? Texas, Florida, who probably don't deal with the rain as much. You know what I mean? Like, and seeing us out there, I hope they're appreciating the struggle that we go through.
Still making birdies. You know, when the rain comes down, that's when I made me treble bogey 7 on 12.
Oh, see, yeah.
It's a fair weather goal for me.
I only started making birds after we passed the beer tent.
You did, yeah. I played a golf tournament, believe it or not. So we got my handicap index came through.
It's all a little too late, isn't it, with that you playing tournaments? You know what you've been up to. You just didn't want me to be lower than you.
We'll come on to the handicap index and the golf. We're gonna open up a new segment today, and we're going to talk about the new golf handicap system that comes into effect from the 2nd of November. So literally 5 or 6 days away from that. So we're going to build it up and just to see how our new handicap system works in this country and how it's going to impact our game for next year. But
and given... anyone as well who's going to be affected by this new handicap system, message in and tell me if you've lost shots, if you've gone up, if you like it, if you don't like it. We can open up a little bit of an what we think of it sort of thing in England, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I suppose that speaking to a couple of the lads around the golf club, the bigger national tournaments, a lot of the lower lads weren't getting in because this handicap system was used all around Europe and they were getting lower. So the category of getting into those tournaments, the cutoff was at a lower standard. So our guys were getting punished because the handicap was higher and they weren't reaching the cutoff. So you find a lot of Spanish, Italian, French...
I've seen that I remember Sergio being off plus 7 or something. I was thinking, like, is he shooting 700 every time he goes out? Or like, what is going on? And that's obviously, it's obviously this handicap system, isn't it?
The handicap system just helps them so much. So hopefully this is going to even the playing field for that level. But there's a bit of controversy for the higher guys, you know, where you're getting the lowest shots. And
we'll come on to it later. Because I know you've got a whole spiel on it, haven't you? Do you know what I mean? I was about to start talking about it there. But
I decided to play a golf tournament and... I was 3 over 3 6. You'd be glad to know.
No, nice. That's
golf is going well.
One little conversation with that man, PT, and you're already breaking your 6 over 3 6.
I'm thinking about it. I think that's what it is. It's in my head so much. But three over through 6 holes, thinking this could be good for me, yeah? Keeping it steady. And then I calculated it after the round, and I was on 24 Stapleford points through 13 holes. So your 26 is level your handicap. So I was on 24 points. I finished on 26 points. I got 2 points. I went bogey, blob, 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 bogey. And you know, for the first time since I've started playing competitively again for a while, I felt like drop kicking my golf bag off the tee, snapping every club. I just, the anger, do you know, when it's not even an important golf tournament, but do you know, back in the day when you're playing big tournaments and you ruin your score because you do something stupid. I'd done something stupid one after the other, and it just took me back to those days. Well,
that doesn't seem to go, because Rory was snapping clubs on the weekend, wasn't he?
Did he snap some?
I think he snapped a wedge on one of the days. Facts check alert.
when he's snapping them clubs and throwing them in the bin, he should throw that hoodie in the bin with it.
Yeah.
Talking about Rory, that moves us on to the Zozo Championship then.
I honestly, you know me, I love a bandwagon. I'm looking on getting one.
Don't.
I can't wait to wear. Like, are they golf specific hoodies? Like, or can you just wear any hoodie?
I mean, I'm not going to lie.
Do you know what I mean?
I think the hoodies that Tyrrell Hatton wore and Jordan
Smith. Tyrrell Hatton is Adidas, and he's wore an Adidas hoodie, and it's got major, major talking time. Any publicity is good publicity. So Nike have obviously said, we need to get fucking Rory out there in a hoodie immediately, if not fucking sooner. You're going to go out and buy the Nike one or the Adidas one from them, which is a higher priced thing. Do you know what I mean? So it's good marketing for them.
But the problem I've got is that people won't buy the golf specific ones, and they'll just turn up in any old hoodie.
You don't really see people turning up in any old polo, do you? They get like golf specific polos and stuff, don't you know what I mean?
I don't know, you know. No. I've played golf in my Hugo Boss polos before.
Yeah, but you're a scumbag.
And they wear golf specific.
They are, because Stenson wears them, don't he?
Yeah, but that's the Hugo Boss sport ones I'm talking about, the thick cotton ones. You know,
you should have been banned for that.
But even the Ralph Lauren stuff, you've got the Ralph Lauren hoodie.
No, you have.
Yeah, and there's golf specific ones, and then you've got the normal attire. So, I mean, don't get me wrong, with a polo, it's difficult to get it wrong. But what I'm saying is, if you've got a baggy hoodie, is that going to get in the way of your golf? If you're putting and you've got baggy, and as you're leaning over for your putt, baggy, is it going to get caught in your hands? Like we said before, there's tassels. How are the tassels going to affect you? These have been made for the hood to specifically not impact them when they do the backswing and follow through. So are these big hoods going to wrap round and smack it in the face as you're doing?
What I mean. So I love a sleeveless G-Lite jacket. Like, love wearing them. I wear them on nights out. I wear them everywhere, and I've put one on a few times for golf and thought, I can't swing in this. But then you get golf specific ones that are like tighter around the chest, like Nike or Adidas, and the design to not get in the way. Yeah. So the hoodies are going to be designed that way. I guarantee you, this is another like Kev statement coming out, that Ralph Lauren and like all the other big companies like Under Armour and stuff will all bring out a hoodie.
Yeah, well, they'll have to now, because they have to keep up with market. So whatever we say about hoodies, whether we like them, whether we dislike them, they're here now. They're not going anywhere. As soon as somebody like Rory McIlroy, no disrespect to Tyrrell Hatton, he's a top golfer, he's world top 10, but somebody like Rory McIlroy throws a hoodie on, it's discussion over.
Well, do you remember, obviously, collared, you need a collared shirt to play golf. You can't play golf without a collar. And then next minute, Nike bring out the fucking polo neck thing, Tiger's wearing them, and then all of a sudden...
Tiger wore them this week.
Yeah, exactly. On that, when he was wearing black, exactly. Yeah. And you don't need to wear a collar anymore. So, like, when it obviously, because it's the goes and the tag, and it moves forward, everyone starts copying. It's the same thing. Rory's the new donkey for Nike, isn't he? Show pony, sorry.
Yeah, that's it. So we'll have to close the debate.
I know the debate is happening. I am getting one. I can't wait.
Bandwagon alert.
I know, yeah. I'm putting with my eyes closed. I'm buying Cobra clubs. I'm looking at one length clubs. I love Bryson, and now I'm getting a hoodie.
You're getting thick grips. You're trying to get your ball speed to 200 miles an hour. The list goes on.
Okay, now I love it, don't I?
But other than Rory, the bogey for this week is the fact that players doing well in hoodies.
Oh, no, yeah.
Hat and one. Jordan Smith got a hole in one, and Rory shot 600 in his hoodie.
No way.
What a marketing tool.
I know Rory didn't only wear a hoodie for one day, did he?
He just wore it on the final day, yeah. He turned up on the range with this grey hoodie on. But you know, when you ask the question there about the golf specific, I know what you're saying about like the material and stuff, but it's also the design and what they look like, and do they look golf worthy? Now the Adidas one did. I thought it looked smart. I don't agree with the hoodie just because I don't like
that.
But
Rory had his hood up, didn't he?
Well, this is it. But even with the buttons and the way the buttons were, it just looked like a bit of a, I'm going for a jog. I can't really be bothered getting changed, so I'll just throw this hoodie on. That's at the bottom of the drawer.
When you've got golf at 12 and the gym at 2, sort of thing. Onto the Zozo there. But I was going to say, if Rory did wear it for all 4 days, he had the most birdies of his career.
Yeah, he did.
In 4 rounds, 29 birdies.
29. He wasn't the only one who had birdies. Do you know how many birdies there were for the whole... Well, not birdies, sorry. Do you know how much under par the whole field finished for that tournament?
Obviously, how many people were over par, you know? Like,
there was three players over par. Phil Mickelson was one of them as well.
What? Yeah.
After his win with the Arv Fogies, and then he comes and finishes.
He knows his lane, doesn't he, Phil?
He knows where he's going, yeah.
So, I don't know, hundreds, was it?
844 under par.
Is that a record? That's got to be some sort of fucking record, has it?
We'll fact check that, but that literally, yeah. I mean, 844 under par. It's the fact you had 5 reachable par fives on the course. So straight away.
Well, we said last week a bomber's going to tear it up, didn't we?
It was like a par 67. It was a par 72, but it was like a 67 because you take those 5 shots off the 5 par fours. You could play them as par fours.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there was 3 players over par. Phil Mickelson called the final round 6 over when he was paired with Tiger Woods. That's probably the biggest disappointment of the week for me there.
I don't know what I was looking at. I seen the stat there. It was like Tiger bounces back with 66 and it leaves him only 12 back. I was like, fucking hell. I was like, well, what kind of stat?
You need to take the only out of that statistic there, don't they?
And like, I was like, but then I did see a few, we just love Tiger, don't we? Obviously. So seeing a few highlights, like that flop shot over the tree. Yeah, he was draining a few big putts. He was stiffing it in there on a few holes. He never does well his first tournament back, does he?
No, he doesn't. And I think he's just warming us up for the big one.
I reckon he only played because he was defending champion. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. He always supports the Zozo. He plays every year. So I think that's every year that he's fit too. So he's always going to play. He was always going to play that tournament, wasn't he? And The one thing he did do, he had a little Jason Duffner, didn't he? He chipped it 2 feet in front of him and then put the wedge straight back in the bag, pulled the putter out and holed the putt for par. Proper textbook Tiger Woods.
Yeah, but do you mean that? Just, do you know that another thing that shows well is the mental strength, because I've seen him duff a chip and then chip in.
Yeah.
And I've seen Spieth do it, where it's like, if I duff a chip, I think it's my whole world's collapsed. Do you know what? Funny little story. Yeah, I remember our Liam once, we were on the 10th of Formbjorn and he hit it, she had a chip for Eagle. And then he didn't duff it, but he hit it quite bad. And he fucking whacked the floor like that, out the rough, chipped at the divot, went like that, and the divot landed in the hole. It was the sickest ever.
That's so good, that. But yeah, Tiger Woods, he had a disappointing tournament, didn't he? Just the one round in the 60s was a 66 we just spoke about then on day 2.
Yeah.
Terrible start to the tournament as well. He was 3 over in his first 4 holes, and round there, you need fast start, don't you?
It's competition rust, man. It's got to be,
yeah. It's got to be, yeah. It's all about the Masters prep for him. Yeah. All about the Masters prep. But John Rahm and Justin Thomas, they're both going to be disappointed, aren't they? Majorly disappointed.
I just love... I love how disappointed Thomas was when he didn't hole his second shot on 18 to tie.
To tie, I know.
It was like he was raging, wasn't it?
I know, but it just shows the ability of the man. Do you know
that's
what
it, yeah.
He had a very, very slow back nine. You think he shot 7 under the first 2 rounds, then he's got himself to 19 under, I think. And in that final round, he's only shot 3 or 4 under, I think it was. I can't remember the scoring, but he got himself to 22 under par with 9 holes to go, and then shot level par back nine.
On a Sunday, when
there's so many opportunities out there, I mean, you should have seen some of the places he put himself in. He put himself on a car path once and played this big sling and hook back onto the middle of the fairway. But that's the thing. It's a par 5, and then he's had other ones where he's chipping through the pine needles, playing these big slices. He's just he every shot in the book, do you know what I mean? But then he said in his commentary, it was good to see those shots, but I'm more worried the fact that I'm putting myself in those positions.
Positions, yeah.
But yeah, Justin Thomas finished tied second with Ram. As I say, he missed that shot on the last, didn't he? going into the last, but he held
that
putt.
Yeah, and then putt, he held the putt,
held the putt for birdie. And that putt itself, it stopped John Rahm going to world number one, because John Rahm, he actually got himself to 23 under par, which was the winning target, through 11 holes. So for his last, his last seven holes on the back nine, he shot one over par. And ended
that's
up
what I'm saying.
The number one
like
spot.
Them two sort of golfers were on the perform well number ones, both of them. Like it's the they'll be disappointed to be shooting level pars, one overs back nine on the Sunday. That's like us making four trebles on the way in there. The same sort of standard it is.
It is, yeah. Especially when there's so many birdies being look at the whole field's finished 844 under par. So it's gettable. You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, Patrick Cantlay's shot was at 8 under to win the tournament, 700 on the final day to win by one shot. And they only need to make one more birdie back nine. You've got two par fives on the back nine or three par fives on the back nine, whatever it was. And even if you look at John Rahm's statistics, he's hit 60 out of the 72 greens in regulation. So he's only missed 12 greens out of 72 holes. He has an 83.33% greens in regulation.
So he's only missing three greens a day.
This is it. So the amount of opportunities he's having, and he's 23 under par. He's at the winning margin. With seven holes to go on the back nine. So he's in with a great chance, and then he shoots one over for those last seven holes, and you're just thinking to yourself, come on.
Hey, what's that though? Bit of nerves, bit of what? You know what I mean?
He's been there and done it before, hasn't he? So I suppose he's playing with a player. If he wasn't playing with JT and going one-on-one against JT, does that impact him?
Yeah. Well, were they playing together, were they?
Them two are playing together in the final
round, well, of course, that's it then. 1,000,000%. Yeah. They're probably thinking, all I've got to do is beat him. And he's probably thinking, all I've got to do is beat him, and it becomes match play. And then little did they know, Cantlay was shooting 700 and is leading the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly the problem.
Well, this is it. So Rahm needed a second place finish on his own or win the tournament to get that world number one spot. So Justin Thomas holding that putt on 18 to tie him stops Rahm getting that number one spot. But in turn, it does DJ a favour because DJ then holds on to the number one spot. And he's joined a lucrative band now with Tiger Woods, Greg Norman and Rory McIlroy as holding the number one spot for 100 weeks.
So, sick that, mate.
So sick, innit?
So sick that.
Bittersweet, innit? So JT obviously holds that putt. So DJ's made up because he gets that record, which he probably would have got anyway. But then obviously Rahm misses out on the number one spot and loses the tournament. So it's like a bitter pill to swallow for
Rahm. Like I know we're going to go into this debate in the future about the world ranking system and how it changed for Tiger and how like it's so mad the way everything's swapping hands at the minute. Like world number one, like six has been this year as the world rankings changed so much without actually doing so little, do you know what I mean? But like I wonder if DJ had played and either played shit, does he lose points for that? Or does inactivity help him?
It's definitely worth a debate, yeah.
We need to find out what happens there, really.
But even the likes of Colin Morikawa, he's won a major championship and he's won a couple of events and stuff, but he's not the fifth best player in the world, is he?
Exactly. So it's like, it all goes on current like sort of form, doesn't it? Like your last, it's like the stupid handicap system that's coming in now. It's your best whatever out of...
Best 8 out of 20,
Like it's like you're taking your best results in for the year, but then not taking in anything else you've done before. Because obviously, if they took in what Tiger done before, he'd still be well number one now, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, you never catch a Tiger. They had to change it just to even it up, but he's...
He did.
Yeah, but he's back at it now.
You know what I mean?
He's back at it. So Patrick Cantlay, he took the W, finished 23 under par, and as you say, he snuck up.
Yeah, but another mad one about Cantlay there. I remember texting you saying I was going to pick Cantlay for our picks for the Order of Merit, and then I sort of went off about it. But then when I do my picks, I try and do them a couple of days on the Monday or the Tuesday, and I put bets on them. But then by the time I'd done the podcast on the Wednesday, I must have changed my picks. Told you what you had picked, and I was like, fuck it, I wish I picked Cantlay. Went on my betting account there and only put a five each way on Cantlay, didn't I?
So you done your betting.
So I bet on him, but I didn't actually back him in the Order of Merit.
Cash money,
but no points.
That's it. That's better than the first place in the Order of Merit anyway.
I know, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, 200 quid? What's been going on? Have I been betting pissed or something?
Again, it's the second, when you look at Cantlay's statistics, it's the second week in a row now where we wouldn't call them pappers because they're still knocking it a long way. But we talk about this Bryson debate and he's ruining golf and he's hitting it too far and he's ruining courses. But again, is Cantley's driving average for the week was 290 yards. He was ranked 20th out of 77 players in the field.
Yeah, so like a quarter.
Yeah, and then even his fairway percentage, he only hit 75% of the fairways, which for the field was 28%. Do you know what I mean? For the week. So he's not getting his ball in play as much as other players in the field, and he's not hitting it as far as other players in the field, but he's still coming out on top. So then
I seen Phil Kenyon put up the last nine or like six or nine winners, and every single one of the, not one of the strokes off the tee or the distance is anything to do with the winning. All the winners have got first putting, first strokes gained approach, first scrambling, first, like it's the closer the green it gets is the tournament winners that are winning. Do you know what I mean? Distance is actually meaning nothing at the minute.
Well, and it's always been swing for show, puff for dough. Everybody knows exactly. That you hold the putt and you win. Look at Ram. We spoke about his statistics before. Ram's missed 12 greens. So he's had 60 birdie opportunities, some of them even eagles, because he's hitting par fours and in par fives and two, sorry. It might have even drove a par four, I don't know. But he's getting those opportunities and he's not holding those putts, so he's not won the tournament. And it's as simple as that. You can hit the ball. Well, you can hit the green
and not be close. Do you know what I mean? It's closer you are, the more chance you've got a percent you've got a hole in it. Do you know what I mean?
And that's what Tiger said going into this tournament. He said that the layout's the same, but the greens are flatter and the greens are bigger. So that's probably why you're seeing that statistic. But you a flatter green for professionals at that standard who hit pure putts, they're not going to get caught out by any undulation or any turns on the greens. They're literally just going to be hitting on the line. It's not going to move as much. And I was watching the golf and I was thinking about that. And I was saying, these aren't moving as much. And there's so many putts getting held and so many birdies being made. And that's ultimately why you've got such a low scoring tournament. But again, it's not about this Bryson ruining golf courses.
You know, that's what even more makes you think that this is a hunt against him.
It is, yeah. He's trying to change the game, and they don't like it.
I don't think they're scared of the distance and him winning that major. I think they're scared of what could happen
in the future.
The change of everyone doing it and everyone getting further, and they've still got the skill as well. Do you know what I mean? And they're scared. I reckon they're scared for the old golf courses, mate.
So, you think it's not so much what Bryson's doing himself now in the game.
Yeah, while there's one.
It's you've got the 15, 16, 17-year-olds, even younger than that, who are coming in and they're looking, oh, my God, look what Bryson's doing. I'm going to go on the range and I'm going to try and swing it and hit it as hard as I can and try and get it as far down the fairway as I can.
Well, I can't see anyone going out there and just trying to hit as hard as they can on the range. Like, do you know what I mean?
Like me and you last week. Little bandwagon there, wasn't it? Yeah. What did we get? You got?
I got a 162. I got.
I got 153.
153. Yeah.
Well, you got one out there, didn't you? 311.
Yeah. 311. Well, 309 on the actual thing. But when we actually played Pebble Beach, I got one out there 311. Yeah.
311. Yeah.
Nice.
That's what we're gonna do. In addition to getting our statistics and working on specific elements of the game, we're still just going to swing it as hard as we can, aren't we?
Well, I'm literally, I want to try this winter. I want to try and do loads of work with the coach, loads of work on like yoga and flexibility, and loads of work on getting stronger as well. I want to be trying and hit it. I want to try and become the best golfer I can be over this winter, and they're the three ways of doing it.
I'm glad you say I can be and not the world. Then I thought you were going to say I'm just going to try and be the best golfer in the world.
Step at a time, you know what I mean?
I was going to say that would be another skep statement.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was an unreal week of golf. It's good. It's good at the minute, isn't it, with the COVIDs, and you think it's going to slack off, but they're still out there just making birdies, aren't they?
Yeah, well, it's one of them as well. And like I'm saying, it's obviously you can't really mention COVID and good in the same sentence. But like, it's if you can't go out, you've got to stay in and whatever. You've got to watch the golf, haven't you? Do you know what I mean?
Well, each tournament as well, it's close. Like, there's two players at 22 under and one player winning at 23 under. It's the odd shot here and there, the odd bit of luck that you get, you don't get.
You need your luck, don't you?
Yeah.
You need your luck. No one can predict how a ball's going to fly into a tree at 100, 200 miles an hour and what way it's going to react, can they?
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it flies back into fairway, sometimes it flies deeper into the woods. That's just the way the cookie crumbles, isn't it?
The rub of the green, as they say,
Exactly, yeah.
The rub of the green.
Members bounces.
Members bounce. You were getting a lot of them yesterday.
Yeah, I'm not even a member yet.
So the order of merit update then. So I picked the three tees to try and mix it up to see if there was a chance of me changing the look. And guess what?
No bueno.
No bueno. Everything exactly the same. I went for Tommy Fleetwood, I went for Tyrrell Hatton, and I went for Tiger Woods, and all three had disappointing tournaments. So just the 15 points for me, that moved me up to 57. So, and who do you have, Kev?
Matty Wolf.
Xander Schauffele.
Xander Schauffele. And John Rahm.
No Rory McIlroy, you had?
McIlroy. So that, look, that's what I mean. So in me bets, I've got Tiger Woods, John Rahm, and Patrick Cantlay.
Yeah.
They're the three that I picked, and then I've changed it to Rory, Wolf, and Schauffele.
You actually could have been leading, and it's so close to the top now.
Do you know what I mean?
There's just 11 points split in the top six. Joe's being caught now by Kieran. So there's 11 players now on treble figures in over 100 points, and there's just two tournaments left, the Bermuda Championship this week and then the Houston Open next week before we've got double points at the season finale at the Masters.
Nice.
So it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks.
You said Andy Furman got top points this week. I've just seen him on the range then, and he was like, you know what, I was looking forward to listening to the Bogey Boys on the way home there, but you haven't released the episode yet, have you? I said,
calm down.
I'm going to sort it tonight, I promise.
I've listened to the Professional Route episode 12 with Tom Eakson.
He's done it. He's done that, yeah, he's well.
Yeah. Lovely.
He loves it, man.
Great stuff. So the Birdie Bogey Bus this week.
Yeah.
It's got to be our affiliation with Arcos Golf, hasn't it?
Of course. Right there, cheers to that, yeah?
Cheers to that. Look out on the socials, because we're going to be doing a big giveaway, aren't we?
Yeah, we're doing a big giveaway soon, yeah. Lovely.
Yeah. So look
that,
out
that's
on
definitely, that is 1,000,000% the Birdie. The reason that we've started all this is obviously to help people and to like show the roots of golfers and how hard it is, but at the same time, we are putting a lot of effort in, and we're trying to put out good content as well, and it's good that like we're getting a little bit of recognition for it.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And as I say, we're decent enough golfers, you know what I mean? We don't claim to be experts, we don't claim to be professionals, but we can get it round. So we'll use the technology that's available to us, we'll record it, we'll show our improvements, and hopefully people will see that and maybe not be inspired by it, but it will lead them to go on and do the same thing, and then they can and make have, those have same go, improvements. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
because like
we said last week already, people are saying that they listen to the podcast and go to the range because they got golf on the brain, so they're listening to music and then going straight home. It helps. I mean, it helps them. It's good.
Yeah. So from the good to the bad, the bogey players doing well in hoodies. Tyrrell Hatton hitting, Jordan Smith getting a hole in one, and now Rory shooting six under.
Well, I think that should be the Birdie now, because I'm definitely getting a hoodie. The bogey should be Tiger's first round, man. What the fuck happened there?
Yeah, or even his first four holes. But like you say, it's just tournament. It's tournament rust, isn't it? He's not bothered about the Zozo, is he? He's bothered about going from 15 to 16 majors. Doesn't want to peak too early.
No, well, he always said, didn't he? Like, when you're a junior, the goal is to peak four times a year to win all the junior comps. The goal is to peak four times a year, win the major championships. Anything else you pick along the way is a bonus.
Yeah, and he's picked up 82 bonuses. Yeah. This PGA tournament.
He's only picked up the most bonuses ever.
So our bust.
It's got to be the Masters Par 3 getting cancelled. A bit sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's disappointing that. I love watching that. I do. I like watching that. All the caddies get involved.
It's fun with the caddies, and you'd always see a mad hole in one. But I think Jack Nicklaus's son got one last year.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, I'm not sure what year it was. Fact check that. But we, it was definitely got one. I seen that.
Pretty sure it was last year. No,
I don't know.
Year before. I might have been when I was there actually.
Where have you been? Have you been in the Masters? You've never mentioned it.
I've never not heard of that. No.
put that on every episode. I think
I'm going to change your name to Kev Whittaker as being the Masters.
So, new segment alert.
Oh, yeah, the GOAT debate.
So, we're going to introduce a new segment now. It's called the Generational GOAT Debate. So, we're going to be picking the two best players of the generation, and we're going to be providing some insight into the careers. And then we're going to let you, the listeners, decide through social media who wins each generation. So what we'll do is we'll do a pre-chat vote on Instagram. So if you're following us on Instagram, what you'll have seen is that we've posted Walter Hagen versus Bobby Jones.
I love this. I already love this segment, you know. Even just if everyone hates it, I am just... The things I've learned about Bobby Jones today are unbelievable.
Well, this is it, and this is what we want to do, get that content out there, because the things I've learned about Walter Hagen are also unbelievable, and that's what we're going to do. Kev's going to argue the Bobby Jones viewpoint. I'm going to argue the Walter Hagen viewpoint, and then we're going to see if we can change your mind, because the votes that went down on the Bogey Boys Instagram podcast, Bobby won, but there's some information I've got here on Walter, which I'll go through in a minute. Which I think that you might change your mind.
So are you going to do, are we going to do a post like saying, now after listening to the episode, taking all the facts, what you've heard, who you're voting for now?
I think we do that at the end. I think we do.
No, that's what I mean. Like after, like tomorrow we'll post that and say, like, is that what we're going to do? Say who do you think is the goat now after you've listened to all them facts and figures?
And yeah, and then it's either going to stay the same, it's either going to be Bobby wins, and then that's fair enough, or we'll see if the information that people never knew about Walter maybe changed their mind, or the information that they know about Bobby Jones justifies their pick. So,
right, I don't care. People like don't know the stuff I'm about to tell them about Bobby Jones with.
Well, let's hear it.
Bobby Jones, yeah?
Yeah.
Born in Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah?
Yeah.
Won his first comp, like the Atlanta, Georgia, like Invitational at age 6. Yeah?
Winning tournaments at 6, yeah?
Winning tournaments at 6. Won a national tournament at age 14. So obviously you're thinking, what's the next step after that? After you look at all the professional routes that's been on there, turn professional. Never turn professional. Never. He said, the professional golf tour is like a cage. At first you're expected to get into it, and then you're expected to stay there. Yeah?
Yeah.
1926, he won the US Open and the British Open as an amateur. In 1930, he won the British Amateur, the US Amateur, the British Open, and the US Open.
In one year?
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean?
So why did he turn pro?
He was a lawyer. That's another mad fact about him. He was a lawyer his whole life. So he done golf part-time.
And still won everything?
Yeah, and he still won loads of stuff. He never played the PGA Championship. And he only ever played the Masters. Like, I'll explain about the Masters in a minute. He comes second in the US Open 4 times as well, and it's a tied record of having seconds with Nicholas and Snead, beaten only by Phil Mickelson, who's come second 6 times. But he'd obviously happily give up that record, wouldn't he? Do you know what I mean?
Definitely, yeah.
So from 1923 to 1930, he won a major every year. So like 1923, he won the British Amateur. 1924, he won the US Open, like the actual US Open. Like 1925, he won the British Amateur. And in 1926, he won the US and the British. 27, he won the US Amateur. And then 28-29, he won the British and the US Amateurs. And then in 30, he won them all. Like, it's mental, that 7-year stretch that he went on. He's won 13 majors.
Wow.
Yeah, I haven't looked at that, but I think that's including the amateurs as well.
Yeah, so and the then, 13 majors will include the amateurs, which don't go on record as majors, do they? But
yeah, so he's not up there in the, he's won 89 actual majors, but obviously all the while being an amateur, right? So he retired in 1930 after that season when he won all 4, like the 2 amateurs and the two opens. And then 1934, he founded and helped develop Augusta National Golf Club and co-founded the Masters.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you could say that, because 1934, that was when the Masters was first established.
Yeah, well, that's he came out of retirement in 1934. So after developing Augusta and developing the Masters tournament, for exhibition, he'd play that tournament every year, 1934 to 1948. But an even more interesting thing about him, right? In 1942, he failed his physical examination for the Army, right? After Pearl Harbor, he went in to try and join the Air Force. I think it's called an F7 or an F4. Don't know what that means in Army terms, but basically you're unfit to be in the Army. And he ended up sweet talking his way into the Army. Do you know what I mean? I don't know how you do that. Like, and then 1943, he was promoted to major, sent to England, and he spent 2 months interrogating the Germans following the D-Day invasions. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, what are you talking about?
I mean, that's all good. that make him the generational GOAT, didn't it, for golf?
Yeah, but he's just a sick man, isn't he?
He is a sick man. I'll give him that, yeah.
And wait there. And he was discharged in 1944 with the rank of Lieutenant Colonel. And he played his last round of golf in 1948 before being resigned to a wheelchair and dying in 1971. So hopefully he gets the sympathy vote as well.
Okay. We're going through his whole... I thought we were doing the generational GOAT debate, not This Is Your Life, Bobby Jones.
I know, but I had to get the sympathy and I had to get the heroic in there, do you know what I mean?
No, what a man.
I'm definitely winning this.
No, what a man. What a man.
Did you know all that?
No. Didn't know.
I
knew there was a golfer out there who won a lot as an amateur. I just wasn't sure who it was. But yeah. But that'll stick with me now. Bobby Jones, amateur, winning all those tournaments. So all of us, including all the professional majors and all the British amateurs, US amateurs, there was 14 in total. Was it 13?
13
in total. Yeah, that's a good going. And he didn't play in any PGA Tour events because obviously
he played in the PGA Tour. Yeah, he won 9 times.
Oh, he won 9. Okay.
Yeah.
Won 9.
But
times.
he just was never a professional.
Right. Okay. Fair
enough. You know what I mean?
So you ready for Walter then?
Yeah, I can't wait to hear about him.
Walter Charles Hagen. So he was born in 1892 and he was from New York, the USA.
Jesus.
He's widely regarded as one of the greatest golfers of all time. And I'm going to explain exactly why that is. So the most major wins of all time was Jack Nicklaus. We know that, 18. Yeah. Closely followed by Tiger Woods at 15. And we'll be talking about those two in future generations on the GOAT debate, obviously. Walter Hagen holds the record for third place overall. He's picked up 11 majors. 11 he's won, yeah. He's number 3 out of them all.
That's sick, isn't it?
Yeah, so he's only beaten by them too. Number 11, he's still number 3. So what's more impressive about that is if these figures weren't good enough for you, there was only 3 major tournaments in this era as the Masters, which you've just spoken about.
Didn't come around until 1934.
Yeah. Yes. And he was past his prime then. So he was the first American to win the Open Championship in 1922. And he went on to win the Claret Jug a further 3 times. So he got a total of 4 Opens. He won the US Open twice and he won the US PGA Championship 5 times. So there is 11 majors. Now, before the Masters tournament was created and that was part of the Grand Slam, there was a tournament which was highly regarded called the Western Open. And this is as close as it got to a 4th major. Now, Walter Hagen won that 5 times throughout his career. So he'll never get them as major championships, but if you call them the Masters instead of the Western Open, then essentially he's won 16 major championships.
I see. Nice. Mad.
So if you think about that, 16 is one more than Tiger. So we wouldn't be talking all these years now about Tiger chasing Jack Nicklaus. We'd be talking about Tiger chasing
Walter Dan. Yeah.
He's chasing Walter Dan. So he turned professional in 1912. He was 19 years old and he played the US Open the following year. He finished 4th. But after the tournament, there was a bit of controversy because he complained about how the veteran professionals treated him. He said that they pushed him off the tee in practice and told him that he could practice once they played through. No, people who didn't know who he was. So we got that and he was so annoyed about that. And the next year he said, I'm going to win this now. And he did. 1914, he went on and he won his first major championship, which was the US Open. In addition to all of that, Hagen is still currently the 8th all-time winner on the PGA Tour with 45 wins.
Is he, yeah? No, I was looking at, I went through all the PGA champion, no, sorry, the Open and the US Open of Jones and was looking round after round to see where, and then every time Hagen was coming, because I was hoping that because we were doing this debate, there was going to be like a first and second, but it must have been a passing of the guard maybe there.
Yeah, so you got 1914 was his first major championship. And by the time you said he retired at 1930.
Yeah.
Well, Walter Hagen played in the 1933 Ryder Cup, so they would have been competing at the same time.
But he wouldn't be able to play in the Ryder Cup, would he, because he's an amateur?
This is it. So he wouldn't have been able to play in that, but they would have been competing. So he's played from 1914 to 1933. So if you're saying that Bobby Jones was having all those wins, they wouldn't have played against each other in the amateur championships, would they? Walter Hagen wouldn't have played in the British Am, the US or the US amateur, because he's a professional.
I see, yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing just to add into how sick Bobby Jones is, right? He played 31 majors, right? 27 top tens as an amateur.
Wow.
Get on that. And that's actual majors, not the amateurs.
They'll have all been the tournaments that Hagen played in as well, wouldn't they? Same there, same time.
You know what I mean?
Amazing. But what stands out most, I mean, obviously it doesn't stand out most, but he's most famous for was that the respect he got from his fellow professionals for how he grew the game through a number of exhibition tournaments he played across the country, because that enhanced the visibility of the game and brought bigger financial earnings. So Gene Sarazen is on record to saying that each professional should thank Hagen for each check that they cash, as it was Hagen who made the game what it was in that era. So
oh,
what
that's
he used
brilliant,
to,
Dan.
What he used to do, he used to travel around America, in addition to winning the PGA Tour 45 times, in addition to winning 11, should have been 16 major championships. He's also going around the country doing these exhibition tournaments outside of the professional game and just getting exposure and getting more sponsorships, getting more visibility to the game, which then brought about more bigger financial earnings. So when I was reading about him and trying to understand his journey, to me, he's changed the game back then the same way Tiger Woods has changed the game now.
I was thinking about Tiger then, yeah.
Yeah, so the way Tiger elevated it to that next level, I'm getting the feeling that Hagen done the exact same thing around that era.
Well, it just goes to show you how much of a sick man Bobby Jones is, because Hagen done all that, brought all the money to golf, and he still didn't take a paycheck out of it. and then went to war interrogating the Germans. Oh, that's boss, that though, isn't it? From Hagen doing all that, like bringing that sort of recognition to golf. Do you know what I mean?
It was literally unbelievable. I mean, but the thing that's closest to my heart for the Walter Hagen tribute, we spoke there about the 1933 Ryder Cup, which in those days it was Great Britain against America. The British took the victory on the day, but you know where the 1933 Ryder Cup was held? Southport and Ainsdale Golf Club. At my home. Couldn't believe my eyes when it come through.
You know what? I wish you didn't tell me that, because I wish I'd have heard it. Like, because you texted me today, didn't you, saying it? I wish you'd have just told me then.
I was too excited. I was like, you need to hear this. Yeah,
that's Boston, isn't it?
Walter Hagen. Yeah, tease it up on the same tease as me.
Was it the same? Obviously not the same layout, is it? Do you know what I mean?
Well, Gumbelies was still there.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's why they won't move. Gumbelies is probably the most iconic part of SNA.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know who Gumbelies is, it's on. We are going to post it as a highlight story of the reel today, when you can see PJ professional David Goscombe hitting it over the over the Gumbelies.
Yeah, so if you look on the social media, you see a reel that we've done, and the Gumbelies sleepers off the railway tracks that are situated right in the middle of the fairway. So it's a blind second shot in, but they've been there since the early 1900s, I think.
No way. So Hagen's hit one over them, well, and we have as well.
Hit one over them, we have, yeah. He's walked the same path we have, yeah.
I think Bobby Jones probably dragged an injured soldier off them Gumbelies as well when he was in World War II.
By the sounds of it, I think Bobby Jones built those with his bare hands.
He carried them over.
No, but look, both him and Bobby Jones, unreal. Both won so much. But for me, Hagen's a generational GOAT for that era.
Yeah, we'll let the people decide that.
It is. But yeah, that's the thing. We don't decide that, they decide that. So what we'll do now is, now that you've heard both sides of the coin, we're going to repost it.
I love researching that today about Bobby Jones. I loved hearing about Walter Hagen. It's boss. I love it.
It was amazing, wasn't it? It was good. Really, really good stuff.
Yeah.
So we mentioned and plugged earlier about the new handicap system. So our new handicaps are in.
I can't believe this. I'm fuming. I said before I wasn't going to mention it, but I am raging.
Why don't you build it up? So what was you saying at the beginning? I was off nine.
I was off nine, and I said, you were off what, 5.2?
Yeah, 5.0.
5.0. I was like, I am going to get lower than you this season.
Yeah.
So I've done my graph, played my competitions, done all this work, been going to see PJ Professional David Goscombe, and come in, and I was like, got to 5.6, and then I haven't been able to play the last few weeks.
I've slowly progressed upwards to 5.2 in the two tournaments I've played in.
So I'm 0.4 away from you. And I'm thinking, if you play a few comps, I play a few comps, I can easily get there. I got my new hand, and then the new handicap system come in. I got it. It was, I'm a 4.4. I'm thinking, yes, I've beat him. And then you text me a certificate, 2.8.
I can officially turn professional now. I might just do it.
So can I.
I know. Should we just do it? Should we just be pros?
I think we should do it, interview each other about the professional route and be like, well, the new handicap system came in and we just thought, fuck it.
Yeah.
We're absolutely shite.
Well, yeah, so you still can't catch me. You'll get there one day, mate. But
I will.
What's important to talk about is how this all works. We're not experts. We've always said we're not experts.
I'll tell you've done a bit of research on it today, so I'll tell you what I know and then you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Let's go, yeah.
So I know for that you do 20 rounds and it's your best eight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's your rolling 20 rounds from that point.
Yeah. And then so it knocks off the worst one.
It knocks off the, not the worst round though. So it's the, say you play 20 rounds, when you play 21, it'll knock the one that you played, which was number one of that 20 rounds. And then,
oh, I see. So it doesn't knock. So
it's your most recent 20 rounds.
Ah, I see.
Not your worst score. It's your most recent. So you'll play 20 rounds. So number one, two, three, right up to 20. So when you play round 21, number one comes off.
I see.
And then they're your most recent, yeah.
I see. So if you're playing well, it could, by the time you play 28 rounds, it could knock your eight best rounds off, couldn't it?
It could do. And that's the point of the index, yeah. So then you're getting an index which is relevant to how you're playing at that time, the most recent, and not just giving you your best scores.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then I know that each course gets a slope rating now.
It gets a slope rating, yeah.
Yeah, not like you've got no standard, like you haven't got a handicap for yourself. You've also got one that takes into the course and the weather and all that into consideration as well. Is that right?
It is. So the World Handicap System provides you with a portable measure of your playing ability. And it's consistent. It's consistent with how all golfers are measured around the world now. So your handicap index, what we've just spoke about there, mine being 2.8 and yours being 4.4, that's the index that you can port to every, so you can take that with you to every single course that you play and every tournament you play. So what happens there then is once you've got your handicap index on each course, your course handicap is going to be calculated on the day of the tournament, and that will depend on the different tees that you play. The way it works, you just spoke about the slope rating there. So what you will have is on the first tee on each course or on an app or in a pro shop or somewhere, each course that you enter will have a slope rating. And what you do is you divide that slope rating by 113. So 113 is always the number that you divide it by. And then that will give you a number. It's just the way the calculation works. I don't know the arithmetic behind it or whatever.
Arithmetic?
I don't know what happened there. I'm saying too many words.
But well, it's
the way 113. So you have a slope rating, and whatever that slope rating is, whether it's 1.1, 0.7, and that slope rating determines how difficult the course is. That'll be divided by 113. So then you've got that number. Once you've got that number, you times that by your handicap index. So it'll be 2.8 for me and 4.4 for you, times by whatever that number is, and that will give you your handicap for that day, your course handicap for that day. So that means that on the day when I turn up, if I'm playing a more difficult course, then
If you come to Formby Hall, your handicap will be about 7 and mine will be about 9, because it's obviously a more difficult course than SNA.
If you say so, even though you're at 4.4 from there. So that's the way it works. So we'll have
because you're at 2.8 in SNA, so obviously it's a fucking easier course.
I fiddled the system. No, I'm joking. But no, you've got.
Go on.
Yeah. So you've got that's the way. Yeah, that's the way. So you'll have a handicap index. Your handicap index is determined by your 20 rounds and your eight best, and you get an average off the eight best rounds. So your eight best rounds gives you an average, and then the more tournaments you play, the more your latest rounds will drop off, and then your stroke index average will change. So until you've played 20 tournaments, you're not really going to have index that's going to be fair, really. You need to, I suppose you need to have those 20 rounds so that you can get that eight average, and then you've got that index, and then that will change. So you go to a form before the slope rating is higher, then your handicap will essentially be higher when you go and play there. You go to a course where the slope rating is lower, then so on and so forth. So your handicap will be determined by the course that you're playing, and it'll be determined by your index. Your index is what you take with you, and then you do the calculations when you get there to see what you're playing off.
I know what happens. So if you haven't got your eight rounds, whatever it is, they take three off you. Like, what's happened to you?
So that's what's happened to me, is it?
So you've been punished. They take to stop bandits turning up without having their eight rounds in the bag. They're off 18. They take three off them. They're off 15. So it's, they're taking three shots off people. But I just don't understand. I don't understand it for the bandit, sort of like the average golfer. But surely they can look back on you, how did I do over the years, and give you a fairer assessment than putting you off. Because three is not really a fair handicap, is it, for you?
But if you go back, if you're going back through the years, then there's a few low scores there. So
is that what they've probably done then? Because
it may be because in tournaments that I've played, that then I was lower than five at one point, and you know, so whether I was off handicap of five when I was about 14 playing at Bootle, and I've never ever once in that time been higher than five. I've never went up to, I think I went up to six actually when I first joined Southport and Ainsdale because it was so much more difficult, but it wasn't for long. And then I came back down and then slowly came down even lower, and I've never been higher. So my handicap has never been higher than six since I've been.
Yeah, that's because you get to five and stop playing tournaments.
So whether they've looked at that and they've just took a gauge and thought, you know, we can't all of a sudden give him 10 when he's never been off 10 in all his playing career.
But I just think, like was David told me all about this, because he had to go to a seminar on it with the PGA, and he was like, if you're off five and then you haven't got your rounds and you want to be less, you just don't play, and you get three took off you, you'll be off two.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, Mark Hyde said the same thing, didn't he? He said that when he got to New Zealand, he played in a couple of tournaments and shot 900 in one of the rounds, and all of a sudden he was off plus five, wasn't he?
And then so he doesn't play any tournaments, and it just takes that into account, knocks three off him, and next one he's sorted.
But then this goes back to the point that we made earlier about it being unfair in England for the elite golfers, because they don't get the opportunity to do that and to have that system in place. So they're not getting to the plus five, plus six, plus seven. So
I agree that it should be the same worldwide, but I just still don't agree that this is the right way to go with it. I think it should be reviewed worldwide and changed.
Obviously, the whole system should be changed.
Yeah.
Well, we'll carry on. We'll carry on. We'll review it, and then we'll see if we can change your mind. Because I don't think it's too bad, me, if I'm being honest.
No, my mind will be changed if I come down to scratch fast. I will be happy about it very soon. Don't be worried about that. But I don't know. Like, not that I don't like change, but I just don't see it being a good system. Like, I've heard that if you've got 10 good holes, if you level par through 10 and you fake an injury, your next eight holes can be pars.
Yeah, but that's only that. Yeah, but that's
something like that.
Yeah, but if there's a, but you've always got a hand.
There's no such thing as an NR anymore. You just get pars in, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, but and I'll explain that as well. So let's go for scoring purposes. So for scoring purposes, everything's going to stay the same. So if you have a 10 on your score when it's reviewed in the scoring. Scoring cut at the end, it only goes down for handicap purposes as a net double bogey. So in stroke play, you'll still need to.
So the maximum you can be off is 36.
Yeah.
If you shoot 180.
Well, I don't know how it works under this system.
I'm saying in the old one.
In the old one, yeah, the maximum's there. That's where they give you the 36 handicap.
Yeah.
So the way this will work is you can only get it. So say using a 9 handicap. If you're playing a hole with stroke 15, then because you only get the 9 shots, you won't receive a shot. So on a par 4, the most that you can get on your score is a 6. So if you take an 8 on that score in stroke play, you need to mark it down as an 8. But for your handicap, it will only ever
and
be
you get
a 6.
That's not changed.
That's not changed either way. The same with the stroke indexes. So if you've got a course playing handicap of 12, then the hardest holes 1 to 12, you'll receive your stroke on that hole. So that's not changed. Nothing's changed there. But like you've mentioned there, one interesting rule, it's called the hole not played rule. So what that's what you've just been talking about then, when you don't play a rule, and how does that work?
I just heard there was a way to fudge it. That's when I was speaking to David. I don't know the exact ins and outs, but he just told me that there's no such thing as an in and out, and you can just carry on if you've done X amount of holes and you've got a certain reason behind it. It's like,
potentially, I'll explain it now, and potentially that is the case, but then that's why you've got handicap committees at golf clubs, because if they see a trend, then they should be able to do something about it. So what this ruling is if there's a valid reason for not playing a hole, and that's defined as loss of light, a player being injured or somebody being ill, or the course declares that there's a hole out of play for one reason or another, whether it's there's work being done in it or it's flooded or whatever, then you're given a net par, providing that you've played at least 10 holes. So for example, if you're a scratch handicapper and after 15 holes, you're three under par, then you run out of light because it's been a slow round, then your score will be three under par. You'll be given three net pars, which as a scratch handicap with no shot is three pars. So you'll be given that as a standard. Or if you've played 12, 13 holes and it gets stopped because of bad weather, then again, because you've played so many holes, you'll just be given those net pars. So those scores count towards your score. And so I suppose then if you went out and teed off 3.5 hours before the light finished and played slow and you still had five holes to go, and you said, oh, it's dark now, so I'll have to just have me five net pars and six net pars, then the handicap committee at the golf club should be able to see those trends and think, hang on a minute, and they've got the power to suspend your handicap.
Yeah, I've been 5 under through 9 a couple of times. It's been going dark, and because the 10th's quite short, I'm like, let's go and play the 10th. I want to try and get to 6 under. Like, I've been in that position a couple of times. If I play the 10th and I'm in a comp there, I get pars all the way in and I shoot 6 under or 5 under. It's like, what?
But then the caveat to that is that you've got to think about, well, what time did you tee off? You've teed off 2 hours before the end of the night.
I do get it, and I do get that I'm thinking of scenarios that aren't real, or they are real, but I do get it's not in competition play and all that. But you can hand in supplementary scores, and what does that stop that? Like, I don't know.
I suppose if
Thornby Hall can get slow play badly, and you can actually not finish a tournament, do you know what I mean?
Well, this is it, and I think it's fair in that case, because if you're playing really well and you're 2-3 under par, what's to say that you don't, and you're on 15, what's to say that you don't finish birdie, 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 and you shoot your best score ever? There's not, so you're given net pars, and it could be a disadvantage to you.
Yeah, but come on, if you're 3-4 under, anyone that takes 3 pars to close, because the nerve set in, you're panicking.
Of course, but there's two ways to look at it. So I think in olden times, then that's an NR, you go up 0.1. So yeah, you're 3 under net, and it's obvious to see that even if you blob the last 3 holes, you're still not going to go up 0.1. So why do you go up 0.1 in those situations? So that, for me, as long as the golf clubs and the handicap committees
I've got an eye on it
and do something, I can see the trends, then I think that's a good rule. I think it's good, because I don't think you're going to have many where you're getting 11, 12 holes in and they're going to
Try and fudge it.
Yeah,
it depends. If you need to get like your round, you need to play like the Crosby plate or the Birkdale, what's called the goblet or whatever.
Goblet, yeah.
You might need to get your handicap down for that, and you can start manipulating the scores. Like, I don't know.
But again, what you can do,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, again, but then that's up to the committees at the club to stomp that out, isn't it? Because I'm pretty sure members are savvy. So if members see that Kevin Whitaker's shooting a net 66 every week, but he's only playing 11 holes, 12 holes. You know what I mean?
No, they are gonna see that in the hoodie, manipulating the rules.
Kev's gonna be off +5 by next year.
You watch. I was thinking with me and you should, because we get getting up to date on rules, and we should try and bend the rules without cheating, without doing anything outside of the rules. See how much low we can get. You're already there by fucking being off 2.8. You know what I mean?
I've already done it. I've succeeded. Lowest handicap in my career, I think. No, but yeah, I like it. I think it's gonna take a while. Yeah, I think it's going to take a while to get used to, but I think once you've got the 20 rounds in the bag, it's going to be a pain to begin with because everybody's going to be looking at the indexes, doing the calculation, thinking, oh, how does this work? But you've got phones, you've got technology now. So those you put your handicap index in and you say what course you're on. The calculations can be done for you. You're playing, what tees you're playing off, we're playing off white. So the stroke, the slope index is higher because you're playing off the white or lower, whichever way it works. So it's probably going to be a pain to begin with, but that's why they're giving you the handicap now in November so you can trial it in the winter months, so that when March, April comes and the season's starting, then
it's like the new rules are going for it. It's like leaving the flag in, like 96% sure it went in the water, like all these different things that are up for manipulation and up for debate. It just speeds up the game and it's, we're joining the rest of the world. So if the rest of the world are doing it, not complaining, then I don't see why I should ask for the rules change on my own.
And at the end of the day, golf's all about integrity, and at the end of the day, it is.
Yeah,
you can say what you want, but golf, you're not supposed to cheat, you're not supposed to manipulate, you're not supposed to do all this stuff. No. You're supposed to, whatever you do, whatever you get on the hole, however you do it, you be fair. So yeah, anybody who does do that then should be fucked off out of the game anyway.
Twice I've played SNA, and one time I actually found my ball in the ditch. But the when we played on Thingio, we were like saying it's come over that hill and it's bounced. The last time I played, I was in this ditch. I'm saying it's in this ditch. We can't find the ball. We looked around and we are 96% sure it's went in there. But in the old rules, I'm back to tea. Do you know what I mean? So it's one of them.
Yeah, because we know we're on the ninth, wasn't it? When you listened to the left on the ninth,
yeah. We know last time I was in that ditch, so I know for myself I'm not cheating, but in me really I could say I'm pretty 96% sure it's in this water, but when I'm not really 96% sure, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's no guarantee it went in there, but...
Yeah, but at the same time, it more than likely is.
Yeah.
But and again, you had to see it go in, didn't you? Do you know what I mean?
But you're already getting punished because you're taking a shot penalty anyway. So,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Then that's like saying, if you lose your ball, you just get to drop one down. Like you don't get to do that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose it's because then you'd be taking a two-shot penalty, wouldn't you? Because you'd be taking your fourth shot.
I don't know, they're up there to be bent, aren't they, a little bit at the minute?
Yeah, and again, it goes back to integrity. It depends who you're playing with and what type of people they are. If you're honest and you know what you're doing, and fair enough.
I wouldn't have liked to take that if I didn't do it the last time when I was actually in that ditch and found my ball, when I know for a fact I can get to that ditch and it wasn't that far off land, you know what I mean?
Same tees.
But anyway, other people going up there could see a ditch and be like, I'm in that. I know for a fact I'm in that.
Yeah,
and when they're not really, do you know what I mean? Probably not long enough, or they're not offline enough to get there. But whatever, that's another one of them rules debates that we're going to bring into the Bogey Boys Golf Day as well.
Definitely. So everything changes when you finish the round as well. So you'll check your scores, sign your cards, submit it to the scorer or through a computer system as you normally would. So nothing's changing there. From that aspect, there is a change from the what we know as the CSS. So we know it as the Course Standard Scratch.
Yeah.
CSS, its name's changing to the Playing Condition Calculator, the PCC.
Ooh.
I know, yeah. So changes. So again, it works the same way, I think. Whereas it takes
into account the weather, doesn't it, as well?
It takes into account the weather, the scoring conditions. It will calculate. You can fact check this, but I think that it can only go one under or three over.
Well, I know. Your handicap can change four shots in a weekend. Like you can be off four the Saturday and eight the Sunday.
That's the index can change by that much.
Is that? I don't know, but I just know that one of the pros are for me all told me that.
So the way that would work is it's something I did read that it's about an exceptional score. So if you have an exceptional score where you shoot, and again fact check this because I don't really know this, but from what I've read is if you have an exceptional score where you're, I think, seven under your handicap, then your index can move by one or two full shots. So if you shoot seven under, if I shot, it's probably bad using me as an example because I'm not going to shoot four.
Well, I got one the other day, didn't I? I got an exceptional score reduction, and Dave was saying that it's a witch hunt after me because there shouldn't have been an exceptional score reduction because I wasn't even under my handicap.
But on this one, in those terms, this would be similar. So if you go seven, I'm just going to use these numbers out there. They mightn't be right, but if you shoot seven under your handicap, so you're off 10, you shoot three over par, then your index for the next tournament will be eight. So that, but then if you play a course that is the slope index brings your handicap down two shots again, then you'll be playing off six. So I think that's maybe where they're coming from when they say you're off 10 one week and six the next, and there's a four shot difference. It's because it would take into account the exceptional score and difference plus the plus the course that you might be playing the following week might be easier. So I'd say that I would gather a guess that that's what they're referring to, but I could be wrong. There could be a way that you do come down four shots from having an exceptional score.
Well, I'll fact check that and get a bit more information on it, because I got told that and then he just said it and I didn't actually get any more information out of him as to why. I just knew, I was just like pissed off thinking, how can I be off eight one day and then four the next? It's like, how's that a thing?
Well, that's
we'll get used to it, and we'll see how it works. And
And that's the good thing about the podcast, isn't it? At the end of the day, obviously, we're starting this debate, we're starting talking. People who are listening to the podcast who either wouldn't be able to access the information because they don't know where to look, or they couldn't be bothered looking, they'll just believe what people say.
Stay for the minute.
This is it. And then they can go and do their own research. Any questions that are unanswered, messages on the social media, we'll try and find it out for you. If not, then we'll...
lie to you.
Yeah, lie to you. Best fact check on this whole thing, because as I say, we're not experts, we don't claim to be.
Fact check the whole fucking podcast, man.
But yeah, like you mentioned there, as you play tournaments, once you've registered your 20 scores, the index, your index is going to be true, and then it will change as and when you continue to play more. More scores will get dropped off at your most recent 20 scores. So yeah, that's about as much as I've got for the handicap system, and that's as much as we.
That's about as much as I can take.
same. So we've got the Bermuda Championship this week.
Yeah, it's a hard one to get excited about, but it's still some serious golf, isn't it?
Well, the big boys aren't there. This is where last year Brendan Todd started his amazing turnaround. He had a couple of really poor seasons, lost his card, wanted to quit, got his card back, and this was his first win. He went back to back, didn't he? Won the Bermuda. Yeah, he's the defending champion. He won the Bermuda and then won the following week. Yeah.
Do you know who one of the favourites that is for this week, sorry?
Go on.
Doc Redmond.
Oh, Doc. My man, Doc.
But you know, an interesting thing, this is at Port Royal, isn't it?
Port Royal. So, Gulf, yeah.
Port Royal, yeah, in Southampton. Obviously, Southampton, somewhere Bermuda. And it ties in quite nicely this week because it's designed by a man called Robert Jones. So it's like Bobby Jones as well. Like, and actually, when I was reading the facts and figures about Bobby Jones before, they actually worked together on a few projects, and they obviously often get confused as if they're brothers or they're like dad and lad or whatever.
But one's the designer and the other one's the player, scared to turn professional.
Yeah, army veteran, but best golf ever.
Still selling it, yeah.
Still having a go.
Brilliant. The Bermuda Classic, a few notables in the field this week. In addition to Brendan Todd, you've got former Masters champion Danny Willett, 2020 Safeway Open winner Stuart Sinks there, rolling back the years. Henrik Stenson, another winner this year. Harold Swafford's playing. Harold Varner III, Charlie Hoffman, Pat Perez, and then you've also got Will Zatoris and Peter Malnati. So there's quite a few good, decent golfers when you think that the household names aren't there, but they always seem to surprise these tournaments. The
course in your little run up there, you've just named three of my picks. My three picks. It has.
Good. I'm glad you've not got the same as me then. Or you might have the same as me, because I've named one of them as one of my picks. It would be interesting. But the course itself, it's not long. It measures 6,842 yards, although it is the longest in Bermuda. Need to get over there and play golf, to be fair, if that's short, man. And it's right on the ocean, so imagine the views are just going to be unbelievable.
It looks unreal, man.
It's voted as one of the best courses in the world, and the New York Times named it as the best course in Bermuda. So it's going to be unbelievable conditions. It had a $15 million renovation a couple of years back, and the lookout hole is number 16. It's a 235-yard par 3 with nothing but ocean between the tee and the green.
What do you do there? Like, try and fucking land it on a boat or something?
I get the driver out and play a cut and double cross it 60 yards left into the ocean.
Or aim for the fishing trawler and hope you can play your second off it.
Yeah, swim over to him. So who have you gone for this week, Kev?
Right, do you know what I've gone for? A little bit of a rollback. So I've gone for Stuart Sink,
yeah,
Henrik Stenson and Charlie Hoffman.
The old fellas, taking it back to the old school.
And this is going to be another one of them where I've put my money on like these different players. I read the story, but Rhian Gibson, have you ever heard of him?
No.
So it's R-H-E-I-N, however you say that, Rhian Gibson. And anyway, he shot a 55 before.
What?
Yeah. I've got a scorecard here.
What do you have back, man?
26. What are you trying to see if he gets beaten in the car playoff or something?
No, I was thinking 55 front nine, but go on.
Yeah, he shot six under the front nine, so 29. And then on the back nine, he's finished. Eagle, birdie, 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 birdie for 26.
Wowza. And he's playing this week, is he?
He's playing this week, yeah. I don't know where this was, but I just seen it as I was reading about it. And I was thinking, I just pick him for the crack because he shot 55, but I thought... And then I see he was like 250-1 or something. I thought, nah, fuck him.
There's no extra points for picking those fellas, definitely not.
That's what I mean, but I've got to put some money on him though anyway.
Yeah, you might as well, now you've mentioned him. So my first pick is Justin Soo.
Oh, yeah.
Justin Soo. He finished tied for... He finished tied 14th at the Corrales and tied 8th at the Shriners. So with this field, he always seems to be competitive. So hopefully he can just go one step further and get me some points because I need them. My second pick, you named him, Doc Redman.
Nice.
I can't see him.
As soon as I seen him on the betting, I thought, Locko's got to pick him, man.
But he finished 35 there last year. And in his 5 starts in the PGA Tour, he's had 2 third place finishes this year. So... picking him with good reason. Do you know what I mean? He's...
What's he been doing when he hasn't? Has he not been playing the PGA Tour often? Like he's been on the...
I think he's one of these... He's not on the Corn Ferry. He's got PGA Tour playing, mate, but I just don't think he's... When all the big boys are playing and there's only so many allowed in the field, I just don't think he gets... He's not eligible to play in them.
Really, yeah. Mad, isn't it?
It is a bit mad, yeah. I don't know where he's ranked and I don't know whether that...
It's good stats, though, isn't it, to him? If he's only played 5 times, yeah, two top threes, as you're saying.
Yeah, that's good fucking, pick.
That's good, that.
And we all know what he's like off the tee.
You only
have to go back to episode 2 or 3, was it? Tell you all about him. So then my final pick is Peter Malinati.
Nice, the boy.
The boy. He finished 2nd at the Sanderson Farms and 5th at the Shriners Open. So he's a man in form, again, with this field, the same field as well that they seem to play against. So I'm hoping he can bring some points this week. So they're gone back to being factual because the TTT didn't work last time. So I've gone back to getting some stats to see.
It's interesting that you're saying TTT didn't work for you and now stats are going to work for you because I don't think stats are working for you anyway in the first place.
Sutton's got to give. Do you know, I'm building it up. I'm just practicing. You know, next year's the big one, isn't it? We've got a lot of requests in now looking forward. People who've missed out on this year. I think we had like 19 or 20 who played this year. I think we've already got about 40 or 50 who want to come next year. So anybody on the social medias as well that wants to get involved, just messages. We're going to release.
The bigger we get and like the more listeners we're getting, like I'm seeing like listeners constantly in like Texas, like New York. You can see them at the listeners for every episode because we can see the analytics. Like get involved and like we will pull as many strings as we can and like even do a GoFundMe page if you win to get you over to fucking play with us.
Definitely, yeah. We'll find a way to get you over even if
we'll
we
do ask. Something. Yeah. Even if we'll pay ourselves because the publicity you get out of that, people will be loving it. Bogey Boys pay for a New York man to fly his dream to come and play the 1933 Ryder Cup course that Walter Hagen played. His dying wish was to see the Gumbelies.
Walter Hagen, the generational goat.
You still selling it, are you?
No, but it's been a good week. We've got our partnership now with Arcos Golf. You know, Bogey Boys 10, get yourself 10% off. Go and check them online. We're going to be doing a big giveaway this week, so check out on the social media page. We're going to be doing a big giveaway, so something you want to enter. We're going to run that for about a month, and I'm going to
try and get to 5 rounds as quick as I can with these to try and give some. I know we're saying we're affiliated, but we want to actually fully be able to test and tell exactly what we think and how this product works. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we're affiliated with them, but at the end of the day, we're also customers, aren't we? We've got the products. Yeah, exactly. We've got the products.
We're not just saying this is boss because we get this. We've got the stuff in our hands. Do you know what I mean?
We've literally got the stuff. We're gonna record our improvements. We're gonna show you how it's helping our game, and if it can help your game, fantastic. If it's not something you fancy, then it's been a great show. I've enjoyed it. Hope you have took some knowledge out of it.
It's been an interesting show, hasn't it? Because we've talked about two old, like one was born in 1980 odd, wasn't he? 1890 odd, like the 1930s. What, like, you did loads of facts and figures on there, and then next week we're going to do obviously another generational GOAT debate. Over
generational GOAT for the next one, yes.
We're going to be doing the exact same thing. And I was so
Sam Snead next week, is it?
Is it, yeah.
Sam Snead and Ben Hogan, isn't it?
Yes, Sam Snead, Ben Hogan, exactly. Yeah. So we're going to be doing them, and I just think that it's really informative to know that, as you say, Walter Hagen put the sponsorship and the money into golf. Like, who knew that?
No, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? So it's interesting to find out these things, even if only us take interest in it. It's still we're getting some information for ourselves.
We have a chat between us, yeah. We can sleep at night.
I know for the fact that everyone that I know that listens to it will be like, wow, that's sick, that, isn't it?
Yeah,
didn't know
definitely.
That. Well, that's didn't it, know, I didn't know Bobby Jones was a war veteran. Wow, he's the GOAT.
And on that note, before you try and sell it anymore, we'll call an end to the show. We're going to release another episode of The Professional Roots. So we hope you're enjoying that series. And we've got another few guests lined up, which is slightly off the professional route. But again, we're pretty sure that you're going to enjoy them as well. So
Yeah. Stay
tuned. Keep interacting with us on social media. And we hope you keep enjoying the shows. But until next time, thanks and bye.
Ciao.